All right, so an inspector calls. It's a play that leaves you thinking. And one character that always gets students talking is Eva Smith.
Right, absolutely. Yeah.
She's a bit of a mystery, isn't she? Like a puzzle we're trying to piece together.
Yeah, she is.
And I know a lot of you are probably wondering, like, who is this Eva Smith and why is she such a big deal?
Good question.
Well, that's the genius of Priestley. He doesn't just give us a character, he gives us, like,
A symbol.
a symbol, a construct.
That's a great way to put it.
So let's start with the basics.
Yeah.
Okay. Who is Eva Smith? I mean, we never actually meet her on stage, do we?
We don't know. We only hear about her.
Right, through the eyes of the other characters. And even her name, Eva Smith, is that even her real name?
Well, that's part of the mystery, right? Priestley
Okay.
leaves it deliberately vague.
So we're already dealing with this kind of shadowy figure. We just get these glimpses of her life through the stories of the Burlings and Gerald.
Exactly, like fragments, you know,
Yeah.
pieces of a broken mirror.
Okay, so let's look at those fragments. We know she's fired by Burling Wright
Yeah.
for wanting a fair wage. Then she's dismissed from Millwards because of Sheila. And then there's this whole entanglement with Gerald.
It's a downward spiral.
Yeah. And it all culminates in this tragic ending, right? Just 2 hours before the play even starts.
And that ending, it's brutal, isn't it? The way Priestley describes Eva's death, the disinfectant burning her inside out, it's
It's
shocking.
horrific. It's like he doesn't want us to look away.
No, he doesn't. He wants to shake us to our core, especially the audience he was writing for, you know, the well-off upper-class folks, the Burlings of the world.
He's forcing them to confront the very real consequences of their actions.
Or inaction, as the case may be.
Yeah. So Eva's death is like this wake-up call, this reminder that even seemingly small, insignificant choices can have these devastating ripple effects.
Absolutely. And by making Eva this nameless, faceless, almost figure, Priestley turns her into this universal symbol. She represents the oppressed, the vulnerable, the forgotten people in society.
She's not just one woman.
No, she's millions.
I see. Okay, but speaking of names, it's interesting that Priestley gives her two. We have Eva Smith and Daisy Renton. What's the deal with that? Is he just messing with us?
Not at all. The names are very deliberately chosen. They're packed with symbolism.
Okay, I'm intrigued. Let's break it down. Eva.
Eva. It's very close to Eve, right? Think Garden of Eden, temptation, the fall of man.
Whoa, okay, I see what you're getting at. So even in her name, there's this sense of a bigger story playing out, this connection to sin and societal downfall.
Exactly. And Eva, it also means source of life in Hebrew.
Oh, wow. So this woman whose name embodies life chooses to end hers.
A tragic irony, isn't it?
That's heavy.
It is. It emphasizes her role as a representative of humanity, particularly women who are pushed to their absolute limits.
Okay, that's powerful. What about Smith? Seems pretty ordinary.
Deceptively so. Remember, Smith was the most common surname in Britain at the time.
So, Zoe.
So Priestley's making a point. Eva could be anyone, your neighbor, your classmate.
Even me.
Exactly. And the origins of the name Smith comes from blacksmith.
Working class, right.
Right. It emphasizes how inescapable social class is for someone like Eva. It's this cage they're born into that shapes their whole life.
And then we have Daisy Renton. Totally different vibe.
Oh.
What's the significance there?
Well, Renton comes from to rent, which back then was often a euphemism for prostitution. This name change highlights Eva's desperation, the lengths she's forced to go to just to survive.
It's a reminder of those harsh realities for those on the fringes of society.
Precisely.
So she's changing, adapting, doing whatever she has to get by
Yep.
in a world that doesn't give her many choices.
She's forced to shed her old identity, become someone else entirely just to make ends meet.
It's heartbreaking. And it makes you wonder how much of her fate is determined by circumstance and how much is her own doing.
That's the question Priestley wants us asking, isn't it?
Yeah. And it's not an easy one to answer.
It's not. But maybe we should delve a little deeper into those circumstances. Let's talk about the men in Eva's life, starting with Mr. Burling. Mr. Burling, yeah. He's the patriarch, right? The businessman. He just sees Eva as a cog in his machine.
A means to an end.
Yeah, exactly. A way to make money, not a real person.
He fires her. Right. For wanting a decent wage. Like he can't even fathom someone like Eva, wanting more out of life.
He calls her cheap labor, doesn't he? Just completely dehumanizing.
It's chilling. And then you contrast that with how he talks about Sheila's upcoming marriage.
Oh, yeah. All excited about, what was it, lower costs and higher prices?
Yeah, it's all about the bottom line, isn't it?
Totally.
And it's interesting, right? Because we have these two young women, Eva and Sheila, but their worth is measured in such different ways.
And speaking of Sheila, she plays a role in Eva's downfall too, doesn't she?
Oh, yeah. Getting her fired from Millwards.
Right. Now, she does it out of spite, jealousy, but she does later show remorse for her actions.
Which is more than you can say for her parents.
True, true. She's the only one who really seems to learn something from the inspector, isn't she?
Yeah, she does.
Highlights that generational divide a bit, you know?
Yeah, definitely. Sheila and Eric, they're a bit more open to change, questioning the status quo, unlike the older Burlings.
Exactly. But let's get back to the men. We were talking about Mr. Burling and his role in Eva's story.
Right. And there's Gerald. He's a bit more complicated, isn't he? He swoops in. He rescues her.
Yeah. The knight in shining armor routine.
But it's all a facade, really, isn't it?
Oh, absolutely. He's drawn to her, her youth, her beauty.
Right. He uses these words, too. Young and fresh and charming. Almost like she's an object to be admired.
Rather than a person.
Right, exactly. And he keeps her as his mistress.
Offers her a temporary escape from her poverty, but he never truly values her as an equal.
And then discards her just as easily as he took her in.
And he tries to justify it all, doesn't he, by saying that he, you know, made her happy for a while, but it all feels so hollow.
It's all about his ego, isn't it? His need to be the hero, the savior.
Totally. And then there's Eric. Now his actions are...
More disturbing.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Much more so.
The implication is there, isn't it?
Yeah.
That he assaults Eva, takes advantage of her vulnerability.
It's awful. It's like each man represents a different side of this toxic masculinity, yeah. You know? You've got the controlling patriarch,
right.
The charming but manipulative savior, and then the entitled predator.
And they all contribute to Eva's downfall in their own way. It's like it's a reflection of the misogyny of the time, a product of their environment for sure. But let's not forget Mrs. Burling.
Oh, yeah. She's supposed to be this pillar of charity and respectability, yes. Right? But she shuts Eva down completely.
And with such cold language, right? She talks about her like...
She's less than human.
Exactly. She calls her a girl of that sort and refuses to believe her story, refuses to help.
That phrase, a girl of that sort, it's so loaded, isn't it?
Totally. It's just pure prejudice, isn't it?
Yeah.
She can't even fathom the desperation that someone like Eva must have felt.
She's so blinded by her own privilege, her own sense of moral superiority. Right. She represents that hypocrisy of the upper class, you know? They talk about charity, but they perpetuate the systems that caused the suffering in the first place.
We've done a great deal of useful work for deserving cases. I cringe every time I hear that line.
Right. Like, who gets to decide who's deserving?
Exactly. And it feeds into this idea that poverty is a choice, a moral failing, rather than, you know, a consequence of societal structures.
And that's Priestley's whole point, isn't it? He's exposing the flaws in this rigid class system.
The way it dehumanizes entire groups of people.
Mm.
And that brings us back to Eva, right? She's caught in this web.
This system that's rigged against her.
But she does make some decisions that seem... well, questionable.
Right. But we have to view those choices in context, don't we? What were her options, really?
Limited, to say the least.
Exactly. Priestley wants us to walk a mile in Eva's shoes, to understand that her actions were often born out of desperation, not malice.
It's a good reminder for all of us, right? To be a bit more compassionate, to recognize that everyone's fighting their own battles.
Absolutely. And it makes her fate even more tragic, doesn't it? This young woman, full of potential, driven to such despair that she sees no way out.
It's heartbreaking.
Yeah.
But she also has these moments where she chooses to do the right thing.
Oh, tell me about it.
Like when she refuses to accept stolen money.
Right.
Or when she breaks things off with Eric because she doesn't want to trap him.
Those moments are crucial, aren't they? They reveal her inherent goodness, her refusal to compromise her values, even when she's facing such hardship.
It's like Priestley is saying that true morality transcends social class. Eva, despite being labeled as, you know, a girl of that sort, she often shows more integrity than these wealthy, respectable characters.
Exactly. And those are the moments, those moments of defiance where we really see Eva's strength.
She's not just a victim. She's a fighter.
100%.
Okay, I'm seeing Eva in a whole new light now. She's not just a plot device or a symbol. She's a complex human being.
Right.
Flawed, but ultimately good.
Trying to make the best of a bad situation.
Yeah. And all of this is happening within the confines of this single evening. This whirlwind investigation that turns the Burling family's world upside down.
Speaking of which, the inspector himself... he plays a key role in how we understand Eva, doesn't he? He's the catalyst. He forces them to confront their complicity in her downfall.
But what about his disappearance and that ambiguous ending? Does that undermine Priestley's message?
See, that's the genius of it. The inspector's true identity, it's less important than the impact that he has.
So he's planted this seed of doubt, this awareness of social responsibility, and it's up to us to decide what we do with it.
Exactly. He's given us the information, and now it's our turn. Do we ignore it, or do we take responsibility for our actions and work towards a more just society? That's what Priestley wants us to consider.
So Eva's story is ultimately a call to action, a reminder that we're all connected and our choices have consequences.
Absolutely. The details might be from a different time, but the themes are universal and still relevant today.
Wow. Food for thought. It's interesting, though, when you think about it, Eva. I mean, she's held up as this symbol of the oppressed, right?
Yeah.
But she makes some choices that don't really, I don't know.
They make you question things.
Yeah, exactly. Like she gets involved with these men who ultimately let her down, and she ends up, well, resorting to things that make her seem, well, I don't know, less sympathetic.
I hear you. It's tricky, isn't it? Trying to reconcile those choices with the idea of her being this sort of moral figure.
Right. Because she does have this strong moral compass. You see it throughout the play.
Oh, absolutely. She does.
But then she also makes decisions that kind of contradict that. So how do we make sense of it all?
I think it all comes back to context, really. What were her options? You have to remember, she's a young woman, alone with limited resources and living in a time where society didn't offer a lot of support.
So we can't judge her actions without considering the incredibly difficult circumstances she's facing.
Exactly. It's like that old saying, walk a mile in someone else's shoes before you judge them.
Yeah.
You know, we can't apply our own standards, our 21st century morals and expectations, to someone living in a completely different time.
And even within those constraints, she still tries to do the right thing. Like, she refuses to accept stolen money from Eric.
Right.
And she breaks things off with him when she realizes it's a bad situation for both of them.
Yes, exactly. Those moments are important.
They are. They show us that she's not just a victim, that she has agency, that she's making choices, even if those choices are limited by her circumstances.
It's like she's constantly navigating this minefield, right?
Yeah.
Trying to make the best decision she can in a system that's working against her at every turn.
And those glimmers of strength, those moments of her choosing to do what's right, those make her downfall even more tragic, don't they?
Absolutely. They remind us that she wasn't just surviving. She had hopes. She had dreams.
Right. She wanted something more for herself.
Yes. Even Gerald, you know, despite his flaws, he sees something special in her. He talks about her being, young and fresh and charming, completely out of place in that awful bar.
Oh, yeah. And the inspector, too. He suggests that she could have had this, what does he say, a nice little promising life.
Right. It's like her potential was just waiting to bloom, but society, the system, just kept pushing her down, squashing that potential.
And that's what Priestley's getting at, isn't it? He's showing us what's lost when we allow these systems of inequality to persist.
Exactly. He's saying, look what we're missing out on. Look at the potential that's being wasted when we don't create a world where everyone has the opportunity to thrive.
So Eva's story, it's a call to action then, a reminder that we have a responsibility not just to ourselves, but to each other.
Yes. It's about recognizing that we're all connected, that our choices, even seemingly insignificant ones, have consequences. And those consequences can ripple out and affect others in ways we might not even imagine.
Okay, but where do we even start? How do we put these ideas into practice in our own lives? It can feel overwhelming.
Well, I think the first step is awareness. We need to educate ourselves about the issues facing our communities. We need to listen to the voices of those who are marginalized, who are struggling.
And then
we act, whether that's volunteering our time, donating to organizations that are doing good work, or simply speaking up when we see injustice happening around us.
So it's not about grand gestures necessarily.
No, not at all. It's the everyday choices we make. You know, how we treat others, how we use our resources, how we use our voices to advocate for change.
So we each have a kind of Inspector Gill inside of us, urging us to be better, to do better.
I love that. Yes, we have a responsibility to examine our own actions, to be accountable, to hold ourselves and each other to a higher standard.
It's a lot to think about.
It is, but it's important work.
It is. So Eva Smith's story, it might be fictional, but it shines a light on some very real issues.
Absolutely. And her legacy, it's a challenge to each of us to build a better world, a world where everyone has a chance to flourish, a world where everyone has a chance to live those nice little promising lives.
Powerful stuff. Well, thanks for diving deep with us today. It's been a really insightful conversation.
It has. It really has.
And to all our listeners out there, keep those wheels turning, keep questioning, and keep striving to make a difference. We'll see you next time for another deep dive.